Where in the Twin Cities, it is actually very humid tonight. It is a perfect night, though, for sitting outside and looking at the stars. I'll be doing a little of that when I get out of here. I've packed a pipe and I've got it ready to go. Somebody told me that they could hear me slurping tea on the air earlier. I'm sorry about that. Didn't know you all were able to pick that up. Let's go back up to though where we ended last hour and pick up the question that we have from Kevin, who is hanging on the wild card line for our guest Jason Martell. And Kevin, I'm just going to ask you to run over your question one more time. Jason's ready to go. Kevin?
Hello.
Hey, Kevin?
We might have lost him.
Oh, had we? I thought he was there.
Hello, Kevin.
Oh, wait, Kevin? Well, then, Jason, I'll ask you if you could to sum up Kevin's question and to help us understand that answer.
Okay, let's after trying to re recall if his question was having to do with let's see, the Anunnaki. I think he said the 12. No, that was the caller before him. I can't remember exactly what he had asked
Well, then,
going
if
into the commercial break.
it was about fallen angels. Right,
That's right.
and so he was getting at the Nephilim question, I think, from the Bible.
I'm not sure exactly what the point he was asking was, but let me just say this. As far as the Nephilim go, this is a tale, in the Sumerian version that the Nephilim, described in the Hebrew Bible, are gods, if you will, that took the daughters of men. So we have the same tales in the Sumerian legend that at some point when man started to flourish, they realized that the women were attracted to them, and so they took the wives that they wanted. But this term Nephilim is thought as a negative connotation, like evil beings in the heavens. So it's a real interesting thing that the Anunnaki. This term Nephilim isn't really used as a Sumerian word. It's just a translated term of Anunnaki, meaning those who from heaven come to earth.
You know, I don't know that I would agree with that, except I mean, obviously, the idea of those that came from heaven came to earth, certainly Anunnaki and Nephilim being the fallen ones,
Right. Well, the
and there's an
Nephilim is.
implication of them coming from heaven, but I don't know that there's a thought that they were evil. I just think that there was a sense that they were powerful.
That could be. It's just most terms, the Nephilim is referred to like the Watchers, the Nephilim, the fallen ones. It's like they fell out of grace with God, and so that's why they were sent here. And
Well, I don't know that. I mean,
I don't agree with that either. That's what I'm saying, is
yeah, I
I
don't
think
know
it's.
that I think that that's the presiding thought on the Nephilim. I think that the really what comes down to is that scholars are just really still unclear as to what it means, and they kind of leave open the question of who they were or what that particular passage is about, but that they weren't gods, although they may have had a divine connection. I don't think that the Hebrew text refers to them as gods. But I do think that is one of those points that intersects between the Hebrew text and the Sumerian text, that there's even a discussion of people or things having come from heaven down onto earth, much in the same way. It really is fascinating.
It is, and I think the angle that I'd like to touch on for the last hour here is where these beings come from, and more specifically, will they ever come back? The Sumerians, again, with their tablets and the writings that they've left us, a large profusion of the texts had to deal with astronomy. And to put into perspective what they said, we have several tablets that describe observation of weather patterns and natural occurrences. Patterns in the sky as far as the star constellations. Over hundreds of years, they made these observations and recorded them on stone. There was even a set of tablets that, for any scholar that could actually read these, a Sumerian scholar that could read these texts, would be able to tell you 50 years in advance on what specific day a lunar eclipse would take place. So they had very accurate knowledge of recording events in the heavens, even to the point where to this day, we don't quite understand how they were able to know the distance between the planets, the way the planets look in space, meaning the color of the planets. They cited Uranus and Neptune as being Mach Sieg, a bluish-green color, Neptune being the twin of Uranus. And this is information that we had no knowledge of until in the late 70s and 80s, we sent probes like the Voyager and the Pioneer, and we finally got color pictures. They collaborated word for word what the Sumerians described as a bluish-green planet, the distance between the planets. But then it gets into some specific areas that we haven't been able to confirm yet, like the planet X.
And why don't we stop there, because there's so many people that want to get through and talk with Jason Martell. I'm sure we'll return to that. I want to get to that question, as long as you're talking about colors and planets, is could it be that that one is a brown dwarf, as some people have suggested, too? What the latest research is on that coming up next, and your questions on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. What's the latest on Planet X? Jason Martell is talking about that here on Coast to Coast AM, and then we'll get right back to the calls. Jason, with all these probes and all the other stuff going out there in space, is there anything new that you're hearing?
Well, yes. I mean, the current research is still continuing as far as the search for a planet beyond Pluto. We've had several blips show up on the radar that really haven't done anything other than raise the eyebrows of awareness for could there be a Planet X out there. In the last few years, there has been a great resurgence in the idea of, is there a planet beyond Pluto? We found a couple of these bodies, Sedna, Quoar, you might have heard some of these in the news, where they found basically anywhere from 800 kilometers to 1,000 kilometer in radius size planetoids, is what they call it. They're just big ice balls floating out there beyond Pluto that they weren't aware of. It's like, my God, these huge objects are floating around out here that we weren't aware of. What I'm talking about actually is an object that would be 4 to 8 times the size of Earth, big object. And there is research that's been going on since about the early 80s, where it started off with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Robert Harrington, who was the lead scientist for the Naval Observatory in Washington. And he detected perturbations in the outer planets, which basically means that Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto were exerting a certain nudge in a direction that led the scientists to believe there's some other large body beyond Pluto that's exerting this pull on the planets, yet we can't account for what it is. So then they started to do a lot of imaging using infrared satellites and telescopes to look way out into the solar system to find what could be causing this anomalous pull. And this led into the whole topic and realization of when we talk about brown dwarfs and failed stars and stuff like that, with the use of the Hubble, it's become almost a standard norm with the other solar systems we formed, or excuse me, filmed, to see that they're binary, meaning they have two suns. So it's very possible that our own solar system is binary, that our other sun that's way, way, way out there, billions of miles away, out beyond this thing called the Oort cloud, it's very possible we too have another sun, but it's a failed sun, a brown dwarf.
A brown dwarf.
And so what happens is that there's been a lot of research and theories going back to one of them called Nemesis, saying that this sun out there, this failed sun, perhaps has comets and debris that somehow get pulled into our inner solar system on a very high-level orbit. And one of the postulations was why the dinosaurs died off was because this Nemesis, this planet that passed around that failed sun, disturbed comets and sent them towards us, and at very large intervals, like the dinosaurs dying off, caused extinction level events. Mm. Now, where this ties into the Sumerian Planet X is that the Sumerians say that this planet, Nibiru, has a very elongated 3,600-year orbit around our sun. So for us, a solar day is 365 days. It's one loop around the sun. One loop around the sun for Nibiru is 3,600 of our years. So that's a very, very long elliptical orbit, which takes it far out into space. And people have postulated, well, what could cause it to come looping back and not just be wandering out there in space is maybe that's another sun that it loops around and sends back towards us.
Let's go back to the phones. It's just fascinating. I know people have lots of questions for Jason Martell. We'll start with Michael east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Michael?
Yes. several points in about things that have come up. Aspartame may not have anything to do with the Illuminati, but it does seem to be a problem with nerves, causes damage there, so you might think about that, look into it more. But more to the point, he mentioned earlier drawings of men and dinosaurs in South America. Those are on stones, and they show a different type of man. It's not the proportions are very different. I've seen the drawings, and there's about 25,000 stones, and they're very accurate on their drawings of hearts and other animals that we do know about. And so the men have very large heads, big torsos, and short legs. So they're very different proportion. Bones of giants, many have been found all over the world. Many historical figures were reported to be between 7 and 10 feet tall. So maybe they had a more direct connection in with the Anunnaki bloodline.
Stop right there. I thought you kind of mixed two thoughts there. You said that they had been finding giants' bones?
Yes, bones of skeletal remains have been found of men who would be anywhere from 8 to 12 feet tall.
Where?
Various places around the world. I could probably, in doing a little digging, there's been reports of that, but not in, as I'm aware of, southern Iraq, or in the fact that the bones excavated showed anything out of the ordinary of other races that they found evidence for.
Well, I mean, I think we
but
all...
definitely big bones.
I mean, we've heard stories, you know, of Piltdown and other, you know, there have been some pretty famous hoaxes and some other things that were done, but I didn't know that they actually had ever found a 12-foot-long skeletal structure of a human. So that would...
I'm not aware of one off the top of my head either, but maybe it does exist.
Okay. Let's go to David, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. David?
How are you doing tonight, gentlemen?
Good.
Good.
I was going to ask your guest if he's ever heard of a book called The Elizith, better probably known as the Necronomicon. Has to do with Sumerian stuff. Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do.
I'm not going to get into the sorcery aspects of it, but it does have some interesting things in there. You know, it talks about the seven gates, okay, Inanna and Marduk,
yes.
Right, and all that. And what was it? Anu is the sun, right?
That's correct, Anu.
We were talking earlier about numerology, and I know 60 was one of their big numbers, and that was for the sun, for Anu. And also in there, it was talking about, Enki and Enlil and all them, those were considered the elder gods.
That's correct.
And then, let's see, Pazuzu, Humwawa, Tiamat, Cthulhu, those were considered the ancient ones, correct?
Tiamat was a word to describe Earth before it was actually our planet.
Right, cut asunder or whatever. Tiamat and Cthulhu are both like a female-male aspect of the same thing, correct?
We'll describe that in a minute with the formation of how Earth came to be with this collision of planet X.
I'll let you get into that one. The other thing was talked about in there, we mentioned the Igigi, right?
Yes.
It talks about in there, it says, you know, the seven gates, and then the Igigi are beyond the gates. Beyond the planet, beyond the spheres, the zoni is what they call them. You know, the planets. And we were talking about the Anunnaki being like they had like a ground crew, and then they had a crew that basically stayed in orbit. I've heard
That's right. A lot of details.
Yes, and I'm trying to keep this real simple because I know, you know, a lot of people probably, and people when they get into that Necronomicon, they go into it for the wrong reasons. They're going into it for the.
Did you want to ask? Did you have like a specific question that you
were
interested
in? Question.
This, there was a question earlier, or a caller mentioned earlier about the differences, you know, between evil and, you know, and divine between the races. Do you consider the Anunnaki? I.e., Enlil, you know, the elder gods, were those basically, those are like the good guys, right? And then maybe the elder gods, I mean the ancient ones, what they call the ancient ones. I don't know if you brought that up earlier, you know, like Pazuzu, Humwawa, and all that. Are those like an older race that might have been in battle with them over Earth or anything like that? And then, you know,
Okay. Well, let's see if we get an answer to that.
Okay. Well, the basic answer would be I'm not really versed in the Necronomicon or followed any of the information. I'm aware of the tidbits of pieces where they've, you know, touched on Sumerian stuff. I don't really know whether or not, you know, evil and good with the Anunnaki. The only answer I could say is my own personal belief is just like we see in nature, a yin and yang. There's good and bad humans. There's good and bad dogs and animals and insects. That probably extends universally in the fact that I'm sure that some of the Anunnaki might have good intentions and some had bad. And that's clearly laid out in some of the tales by the Sumerians where the two main gods, as the gentleman mentioned, Enlil and Enki, Enki was in favor of humans and supported us being created. However, Enlil did not like us, wanted us destroyed. So that was just a faction between them where there was a disagreement upon us being created.
Well, that's interesting. Well, the duality of the Sumerian texts may be something we just have to adjourn for another night. But maybe in the meantime, you might be able to do some research on that. There seems to be some interest in it.
There's a wealth of information left from them that, you know, again, can go into various angles.
Okay.
For me, I've sort of touched on the religious aspect and more specifically, you know, this planet Nibiru, and does it actually exist? And if it does, when are these beings, the Anunnaki, going to return?
First-time caller line, Artie, on Coast to Coast AM for Jason Martell. Artie?
Yes, hi, Ian. Fantastic show, and hello, Jason.
Hello.
Thank you.
You were mentioning, Ian, that you're drinking some tea. I'm having a cold beer. Hope that's okay with my fiancée, Dana. But I read reading presently a very good book. It's by Thomas Chiasano. It's about the 12 tribes. It's titled The 12 Tribes. And he mentions that he did some research that because of the fallen angels, stuttering and alcoholism came about from the fallen angel. And I was wondering if your guest is going to get Sirius Satellite Radio for January 1st for Howard Stern.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay.
That's like the easiest thing in the world to do on this show. And
yes.
I mean, I know that for Artie or whoever, that's considered like some sort of badge of honor, but like you could do that all night long in the show because we're just not going to stop you or screen you that much. And if you want to do that, you can do that. But I don't know why you'd bother. It's not that big a deal, but go ahead. Then don't even bother answering his question.
Yeah, no,
he invalidated his question.
There was really anything there to answer. Okay.
Okay, let's go west of let's go to the wild card line. Keith for Jason Martell on Coast to Coast AM. Keith?
Keith from Austin, Texas. And basically, I want to know if, you know, it just seems kind of inconceivable to me that a natural celestial body could make it around in view of the Earth that quickly, and that there could be one coming around anytime soon. So do you think it's possible that this could be like an artificial body?
Oh, no. What do you mean by that?
I understand what he means, like a spaceship.
Like, I mean, the thing that came to mind, honestly, you know, when I thought about this question was, like, the Death Star from Star Wars.
Yeah, right? Actually, that was my first impression, what you were talking about. Yeah, some sort of, not spaceship per se, but something that would be an artificial structure in an orbit.
Right.
Okay.
Well, here's how I would answer that. Back when we had the little flare of Comet Hale-Bopp, there was a little mishap of a group called Heaven's Gate that said that, basically, Nibiru, or a big spaceship, was in the tail of this comet and coming towards us, you know. This, of course, wasn't the case. There was some interesting anomalies with Hale-Bopp, which you can't get into in this show tonight. But my personal opinion on it is that I think Planet X or Nibiru would actually be a real planet. Based upon the information that this planet was observed by the Sumerians thousands of years ago, where even during daylight, when this thing passed by, they could see it as a glowing object in the sky. It was a very radiant, bright planet. That's why they depicted it as a glowing cross. Even during daylight, you'd see the sun and then this glowing cross. But the only thing that I would throw in there as far as it being a Death Star or something that's going to come around and cause catastrophe, people get confused in the fact that Nibiru, yes, possibly as the Sumerians described, when it passed by us.
You know, I'm just going to ask you to hold on right there just because I'm coming up on the break, and I just want to make sure I don't miss a word on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. It's Coast to Coast AM My name's Ian Punnett. We're talking with Jason Martell. And just before the break there, we were chatting about the theory from a caller, Keith, that maybe this is a man-made object that's out there, maybe a type of Death Star was the only image that he had in mind, perhaps a rotating or orbiting, in some way larger than a typical spaceship. And you were just talking about how you didn't believe that to be true.
Sure. Well, I understand his notion. The only argument I would say is that based on the Sumerian texts, Nibiru is actually described in some parts as being an actual very mountainous planet, a very watery mountainous planet, meaning oceans, but then the land continents rise very high as far as the water being low, and then, you know, like large mountainous areas. So it's a very interesting planet, and the topography as described, you know, left to us in this form of the Enuma Elish and other texts by the Sumerians that describe vaguely the makeup of Nibiru. But more interestingly is the interaction with this planet and Earth and our solar system. So that's kind of what I focused on in some of the areas where people have been interested in. When will this planet pass by again? What effects will it have? And so some of the research that I've done is that noticing that, let's say, the last time that it came by and the effects that it could have caused, we know from the records that, yes, at one point it did pass by, and it could have caused, I guess as they've recorded it, you know, a great flood. In passing by Earth, the orbit of Nibiru places it between Mars and Jupiter, currently where our asteroid belt is located. And as described by the Sumerians, originally 4.7 billion years ago, I mean a long time ago, they don't give an actual number, but they say in the time when the planets hadn't fully formed into solid objects, this intruder planet comes in, is pulled in by the outer planets like Neptune, Saturn, and Jupiter, pulled into the inner part of our solar system where there was once a planet called Tiamat. This intruder planet, Nibiru, basically had a series of collisions where it actually whacked our primitive, then called Tiamat, and making it into half a planet. In this collision, strewing out the asteroid belt, as the Bible calls it, the hammered-out bracelet, making the asteroid belt, Nibiru goes on to have a very long 3,600-year orbit that passes by through Mars and Jupiter once every 3,600 years. However, the thing to note is that I don't personally believe that every time it passes by in the inner solar system, it causes catastrophe here on Earth. The reason why I say this is if we do just a basic mathematical extrapolation of saying the creation of the solar system was 4.7 billion years ago, Nibiru's orbit is 3,600 years, one loop. So if we divide 4.7 billion years from the amount of times it's looped through every 3,600 years, we're looking at over a million times that it's completed this orbit.
Right.
So it's very possible that not every time it passes by us, it's going to cause gravitational effects to the point where we have a great flood.
Where does the Bible refer to that as the hammered out bracelet?
In Genesis.
Okay.
So in describing the makeup of the solar system and how God created the heavens and the earth in 7 days, that's part of the tale in a concise version. But it's also told in a Hebrew version and an Akkadian version, even older, which is even more detailed.
I'm unfamiliar with the passage, so thank you. I do have a question, though, about the Planet X thing, that if it's described as being a planet like with mountains and waters, and sounds very similar perhaps to the environment of Mesopotamia, right?
Well, Mesopotamia is actually it's not a very mountainous region as much as it's got a lot of clay.
Well, okay, but there's not, mountains wouldn't be out of the question if you're going to have,
you of course know, not, no.
Right? So all I'm saying is that you've got that type of a composite image of what Planet X was, then how could it also have been, or how do we reconcile that with this image of it being another sun?
Well, it's not actually that Nibiru would be another sun, but there's actually another sun that Nibiru loops around
and
gets shot back towards us. You know, interestingly enough, Ian, about 4 months ago, I attended a conference at Jet Propulsion Laboratories by a Dr. Michelle Fowler. And we have a new telescope that we just launched in space. It's called the Spitzer Telescope. It was first called CERTIF, but they renamed it after this famous astronomer, Spitzer. And I asked Dr. Michelle Fowler, who's the lead astronomer on this project, you know, is it possible that this new satellite, Spitzer, will be able to image things like a Planet X? And do you believe that it's possible an object 4 to 8 times the size of Earth could be in our solar system?
Right.
And very interestingly, she said, yes, I do believe that it's possible. Whether or not Spitzer would be able to see it, you know, I don't know. This telescope looks at very specific areas in the solar system, but already in doing so, in the 4 months that it's been released, they've had an exponential growth as far as extrasolar planets, white dwarfs, brown dwarfs. And so this has been the overriding problem with modern search for Planet X, is that off the scale, we find thousands of these wandering planets, let's call them, out there beyond what we call the Kuiper Belt or the Oort cloud, but could still possibly be something that passes through our solar system.
Okay.
So it's not a question of does Planet X exist, it's will we be able to actually pinpoint which of these orbiting planets or wandering stars it is.
All right, and we'll stop there for the moment and come back and then run the table on the rest of the calls that are waiting for you. And you know the numbers. If you can get through, you're welcome to try. We still have many more people to get to who have been waiting patiently to chat with Jason Martell next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. CoastToCoastAM.com is the website. You can always link up to us through via email there or to all of the various websites for Jason Martell. Let's go to Sonia on the wildcard line for Jason Martell on Coast to Coast. Sonia? Oh, sorry, go to Ken. Sonia just dropped. I'm sorry about that, Sonia. We were trying to get to you. Ken on the wildcard line. Ken?
Christopher?
All right.
Well, close enough. Hey, Christopher.
We'll go to Christopher. Go ahead.
Okay, is there, by the way, I'm really pleased with Ian, with you doing this. I hope that they're going to keep you on for a long time. But back to the subject, isn't there some Northern and Native American legends that speak of the Anasazi and their interactions with them? And wasn't there also some bodies found that the government swifted away that were from 9 to 12 feet tall beings with a lot of red hair on them? And there's also somebody at during the same time, and this was all this is all sourced from the show too.
Right. Yeah. In the Southwest, wasn't the that was the burial site that you're talking about with the 9 to 12 foot tall
right.
bodies?
Right. Right. In the Grand Canyon or Colorado River area, and then also that there might have been evidence of a natural museum that was in the Death Valley area, and that the Death Valley area may have been a site of a nuclear explosion.
Interesting.
Jason, you know about those?
I've not heard anything about that. I did hear a touch on, you know, the 9 to 12 with the red hair, a Nordic race of some kind, but nothing really, again, that would pinpoint something Anunnaki origin.
Okay. Although, have you done any work on the Anasazi-Anunnaki connection?
There is, several tribes in North America, one of interest, the Hopi, and as he, you know, the Anasazi, that they have star maps, basically, that they've recorded constellations and passed down, and it's pretty interesting information, again, kind of what the Sumerians were aware of as far as astronomical information and making decisions based upon where the stars are at certain points.
And seemingly above their level of development at that time.
That's right.
Okay. Ken, on the wildcard line, for Jason Martell on Coast to Coast AM.
Ian, welcome back to the Coast to Coast Pantheon. Jason,
thank you.
Pleasure to speak to you.
Hey, Ken.
Calling from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm an amateur Sumerologist. And real quick to touch on something a caller said before about the Necronomicon. That was a hoax perpetrated by some New York sorcerers that perverted Sumerian mythology in the writings of H.P. Lovecraft. But anyway, it's
there you
not,
go. That's the name I was looking for. Was H.P. Lovecraft?
Yeah, it's not worth reading.
Right, he's a big fan, but it's blown out of context from the facts.
It is absolutely. But I had a couple questions though. What's your take on the Dulkhug? I think that's what it's called, the Creation Chamber. And
what is it?
Well, from what I read, the Anunnaki were created in the Dulkhug, D-U-L-K-U-G. It's something that I read in one of Samuel Noah Kramer's books.
Kramer?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, he's a very well-known Sumerologist.
Yeah, it was just referred to as a creation chamber. It didn't say really, didn't delve into what...
I've never actually heard
were.
That term. Yeah, that is interesting, though.
And another quick thing, I'll take your comments off the air, but I'm always curious that the representation of Nibiru seems to be kind of similar in to like a Saturn-type planet with the cross, with the winged disk. And Saturn seems to be, pretty active at spitting out ejecta of all different types, water, and, as everybody knows, the Cassini probe has discovered Titan having organic elements on it and whatnot. And, is it possible that Nibiru could be a Saturn-like planet, or could Nibiru even possibly be Saturn? Could the all of the information the Sumerians left be, slightly reinterpreted to possibly be a stationary planet in
sure.
our system?
Well, here's what I would answer. That's actually a good question. The research done by Zachariah Sitchin culminated, as far as the topic of Planet X, at NASA with Dr. Robert Harrington, who was looking for, as we talked about earlier, the difference between a 12th planet and a 10th planet. Dr. Harrington was looking for a planet beyond Pluto, a 10th planet on a very highly elliptical orbit, and he actually had Zachariah Sitchin come and meet him in Washington at the Naval Observatory for them to swap notes on the Sumerian Nibiru and the NASA Planet X. And very interestingly enough, word for word quote, Dr. Harrington said, Planet X looks to be a nice, habitable planet. It could be a very gaseous planet with an atmosphere, very easily habitable for life. And that was coming, again, from a NASA scientist collaborating, very seldomly do we have that, with a scholar saying it's very possible the ancients were aware of this planet as well.
What years did Zachariah Sitchin live?
Zachariah Sitchin is, by God's hand, still alive. He is 84 after having triple bypass surgery. Just gave his recent appearance in Chicago last weekend. But he is, still with us. I would say this, Ian. There is a trip as far as, me going out and going to these places firsthand. By the help of another gentleman by the name of Eric Polterek, who is a close Sitchin confidant and helper of Sitchin, we are planning a trip to go to some of these places like the British Museum and some of the actual places spoken about and written about by Sitchin, so that people firsthand for themselves can come along and see these artifacts that we're talking about. And that information is on Sitchin.com, actually Zachariah Sitchin's website.
Yeah, and I thought he had died a couple years ago, so thank you for that. Do you often speak with him?
I do speak with Zachariah Sitchin, not very frequently. He is still involved in the research, but really does kind of like to keep to himself, and at this elderly age, doesn't very often make appearances or go on radio shows anymore.
Okay. Let's go to Jeff, west of the Rockies, for Jason Martell on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff?
Hey, Ian. How you doing?
So well, thank you. You're talking with Jason.
Hi, Jason.
What's up,
I'm calling from Juneau, Alaska. By the way,
oh,
Ian,
cool.
You're doing a great job. I'm really glad that you're the one, especially for this show, Jason. I am really excited to hear what you've had to say so far, and I have so many things to add. But for the sake of time, I just wanted to see if you make a correlation that I make, and I just want to get your opinion on it. And if
sure.
you could, if you could just answer and let me get off the phone when you give your answer, so I can hear it. A thread that seems to hold the Bible together is something that got me going on this search of research on my own, and that is this simple little idea that the younger gets the birthright, not the older. And way before I ever learned about Sitchin or the Sumerian text or any of those things, it occurred to me that this is a thread that holds the whole Bible together.
Explain what you mean by that, because I think typically it's the older that gets the birthright.
That's right.
In the Bible.
But if you look at the stories in the Bible that I'm talking about, it starts right with Adam and Eve. Eve was the younger in the creation thing. She's the one that's supposedly deceived with the apple. Cain is the older, but he murders Abel because his little gift to God was more acceptable.
Right.
The story of Joseph, who is traded off by his 12 brothers, the sons of Isaac, to the Egyptians, you know, for money or something, or he winds up the elder, all
right,
bow to the lower. This idea of Jacob and Esau, Jacob has to fool his blind father, Isaac, who gives the birthright to Jacob instead of Esau. This whole thing goes through the story of the entire Old Testament, and even
into the
Jesus thing, and what occurs to me is this thing that the Sumerians also said that the Anunnaki worshipped a god of their own, and he gave them specific instructions about the manipulation of his creation in the DNA thing, and the younger now gets the birthright that was legally the right of the older, and that is what they're kind of miffed about. And that is the thing that explains all of our religions, because all of our religions are an attempt to explain to us who we are,
and that we have that
birthright. Let me get off the air.
Yeah, let's hear what Jason was saying, because I think I have a comment too I want to throw in. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, to be honest with you, Ian, I don't really have much of a comment on that. That's an interesting point. We don't have a lot of information about the Anunnaki beliefs of God, so it's a very hard one to answer.
But let me throw in something then that may clue you into something which he's saying.
I
wasn't sure what he meant at first, but after he explained it, I think that's actually a very bright observation, that there's a running theme in the Bible on the reversal of power structures. And what you have is a power structure which originally would have given the birthright to the oldest, but that in very key points in the Bible, both in the Hebrew Bible and in the Christian New Testament, there is this reversal of power. In fact, so much of what Christ talks about is flipping the table order, and so that the last shall be first.
Right.
And so that there's this tension between the power structure and then the inverse of the power structure at key times. And I hadn't really thought about it that way. I think Jester,
that's a deep one.
I think Jester made a really good point. Let's go, Jason, with East of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Jason?
Hi.
You're talking with Jason Martell.
I'm actually east of Omaha. I'm on the road right now.
Cool. What's up, Jason?
Hi. I had a quick thing to add about the Nephilim, and then I've got a question for you. According to my interpretation of the Nephilim, they were actually sons of God, or maybe of the Anunnaki. Basically, the Anunnaki came and took human wives for their own, and
That's
then their
right.
offspring were these Nephilim. The Bible calls them men of great renown. I just wanted to add that real quick. And then my question was I didn't know if you had ever heard of the Namsheb of Enki.
I don't believe so. The Namsheb?
Namsheb. Yeah, it was actually a thing, actually supposedly written by Enki, that it actually coincides with the story of Babel in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tower of Babel.
It was meant to confuse the speech in men's tongues, and supposedly it was put forth by this character, Enki.
Well, the only comment I would make to that, it's somewhat of an interesting point, is that at some point there was a decision to make all the various different tribes speak different languages. So at some point in our past, we all did speak one language, and then there was this decision for us to have this set apart so that we wouldn't all be able to collaborate, maybe so that we couldn't rise up as one against the Anunnaki. But it was a very interesting thing that at some point, yes, we were tribalized into certain language cults for various races.
Well, I'll leave the rest of that up to those people who are listening to contact Jason Martell to link up to his work through the coasttocoastam.com website. And thank you so much, Jason, for exploring these questions with us and being so open about what you do and what you don't know, which is refreshing.
Thanks again, Ian.
Thank you, and God bless you. And I will say, if you ever are looking for proof of divine human beings on Earth, semi-gods, if you will, giants among us, let us not forget Lance Armstrong. Certainly qualifies to me. Deus te amat. And I do too.